from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, people ask me, how's it going down there? They mean New Orleans, of course. And since this broadcast is originating there from today, I can tell you that carnival season has started in earnest. It's not what you think. Don't believe the Budweiser ads. That only happens on one street. And the mayor. The mayor gave a television interview this week affirming that the ability to distinguish between fame and notoriety is rapidly being extinguished in American society. The mayor said that he sometimes just says the crazy things he says to keep himself out there, keep people aware. And he said also that he hasn't taken advantage of his worldwide name recognition yet. So watch for that reality show where Ray Nagin prevents people from building a new house. Speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, it is mid-January. As I recall, it was early December when the Centers for Disease Control finally agreed with FEMA to examine the FEMA trailers for formaldehyde fumes, because it was cold enough that people would be ventilating them finally. We're now in mid-January. The only thing the local newspaper has reported on the results is that they're not known yet. So apparently it takes a much longer time to find out if there's formaldehyde in your little tin can of a home than any of us might have thought. Yes, it is rocket science. Thank you. But we know something. FEMA has offered to buy back the trailers that it sold, selling them for 40 cents on the dollar. FEMA is offering to buy them back for their original purchase price. Hey, there's a little profit there, because of concerns that the trailers are tainted with formaldehyde. So does FEMA know something or does FEMA not know something? This is from the Washington Post. The agency said it is making the offer because of concerns about a, quote, about, quote, possible adverse health effects. 10,800 trailers have already been sold from July 2006 to July last year. Purchasers will be responsible for getting the trailers back to FEMA drop-off points. So, who do you believe? Your lion lungs or FEMA's buyback program? There's progress somewhere in Cameron County, Texas. Throughout his term as judge, Everything means something different in Texas. Judge Carlos Cascos has been adamantly demanding that the levees in South Texas be repaired. Either pay now to fix these levees or be ready should our levees breach to spend $100 billion like they did in Katrina, he says. This week, the International Boundary and Water Commission announced a $10 million project to ensure that all levees in the Cascos Valley meet FEMA requirements. Now, I didn't know, we here in New Orleans didn't know FEMA had requirements for levees. Don't know if we ever met them. From the Buried Lead Department, Los Angeles Times ran a story this week about an attack on a luxury hotel, a heavily fortified luxury hotel in the heart of Kabul, Afghanistan. The Serena, a deluxe five-star establishment in rundown Kabul that's frequented by foreign delegations, Western aid workers, and high-ranking Afghan officials, according to the Times. The Times, the dog trainer. But to get to the lead, you got to go way down here. To this paragraph, quote, "We heard gunfire, a lot of it," unquote, said Suzanne Griffin, who works for the U.S.-based nonprofit group Save the Children. That's right. When you adopt a child for $22 a month, your Save the Children worker stays in a heavily fortified luxury hotel in the country where she or he is working. All right, maybe that's not news. Maybe this is news. In Canada, the United States has joined a group of countries, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Afghanistan, and China, good group, as a place where foreigners risk torture and abuse. This is according to a Canadian manual for Canadian diplomats. It accidentally found its way into the hands of Amnesty International lawyers. Uh-oh. I'm telling you, that's the border we have to fortify. The manual is intended to, quote, create greater awareness among consular officials to the possibility of Canadians detained abroad being tortured, according to the manual. Part of the workshop is devoted to teaching diplomats how to identify people who've been tortured. It features a section on, quote, U.S. interrogation techniques. The U.S. ambassador to Canada has protested the mention, and the leak appears to have embarrassed Canadian officials, if they're not embarrassed enough being Canadian officials. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, a letter from listener Gerald, who lives in Maine. I have no idea how he hears the show up there, maybe on shortwave. He says, "Dear Mr. Shearer, I heard your broadcast of last week in which you mentioned Admiral Gary Ruffhead, new chief of naval operations. The next day, while reading the blog of Senator Susan Collins of Maine, I read how she met with the same admiral. Curious, I looked him up on Wikipedia and, to my surprise, found that the now chief of naval operations was a former commander of the USS Port Royal. This is significant because that's the very ship, one of the three that was in the group that was confronted, met, engaged by those Iranian speedboats. I thought maybe you just might want to mention how weird it is that Ruffhead was the former commander of the very ship involved in this generation's Gulf of Tonkin incident." There's a guy who just doesn't believe in coincidence. Hello, welcome to the show. It's a nutty coincidence. I went to school with 27 Jennifers, 16 Jens, 10 Jennies, and an Arizona. Yeah, it's the sweet shine of, yeah, for some divine love, the blessed arrival of you. You might be the one that I've been seeking for. You might be the strange, delightful. You might be the girl in which you'll end all girls. You might be the sweet, unspiteful. I rode the bus with 27 Jennifers. 15 Jens, 10 Jennies disapproved.
You might be the sweet, unspiteful. You might be the one that I've been seeking for. You might be the strange, delightful. You might be the girl in which you'll end all girls. You might be the sweet, unspiteful. 27 Jennifer.
And what an irony that Jenny isn't here this week. From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain. Nothing seeping. Nothing to look at. Move along now. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And we're far enough away from the holiday season that it's now become clear to me how strange it is that without any of us noticing, well, some of us noticed, those of us in the car and advertising businesses noticed, that the Christmas holiday season, which had already been an advertising bonanza for all sorts of other businesses, suddenly in the last 5 years became a time for every car manufacturer to hold a special promotional, as they all call it, event. It's an event. It's not a sale, because a sale would, you know, it's an event. And it's, when did that happen? What, how did suddenly Christmas become the time to buy a car? Well, I think I have a theory, which is that about 7 years ago, Lexus started this ad campaign at Christmas time, and it seemed semi-jocular. Guy, you know, shows brings his wife out to the front lawn, and there's a Lexus wrapped in, you know, gift wrap. And I think they were kidding, or I think they thought they were kidding, and all of a sudden they found they were selling a lot of Lexi at Christmas time, and all the other car manufacturers said, yeah, us too. We're going to hold an event. So now in addition to all the other advertising we have at Christmas time, we have car advertising. You know, I'm old-fashioned, ladies and gentlemen. Car advertising belongs in September, don't it? Maybe, maybe not. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Oh, it's bubblicious this week, believe you me. And why would you? What do I know? From the Independent in Britain, the cultivation of opium poppies, whose product is turned into heroin, is spreading rapidly across, any guesses, what country? Iraq. Farmers find they can no longer make a living through growing traditional crops. Afghans with experience in planting poppies have been helping Iraqi farmers switch to producing opium in fertile parts of Diyala province, once famous for its oranges and pomegranates, northeast of Baghdad. The shift by Iraqi farmers to producing opium was first revealed by The Independent last May and is a very recent development. The growing of poppies is deeply divided between Shia and Kurd. The speed with which farmers are turning to poppies is confirmed by the Iraqi news agency Al-Malaf Press. Opium is now being produced around areas where Al-Qaeda is strong. The paper quotes a local agricultural engineer. Hey, there's a line of work. Saying that local farmers got no support from the government and could not compete with cheap imports of fruit and vegetables. The price of fertilizer and fuel has also risen sharply. Says the engineer, the cultivation of opium is the likely solution. The growing and smuggling of opium, The Independent continues, will be difficult to stop in Iraq because much of the country is controlled by criminalized militias. Really? I thought it was nice now. American successes in Iraq over the past year have largely been through encouraging the development of a 70,000-strong Sunni Arab militia, many of whose members are former insurgents linked to rackets, kidnapping, and crime. Our friends! The move of local warlords, both Sunni and Shia, into opium farming is a menacing development in Iraq, where local political leaders are often allied to gangsters. Yeah, so different from here. But wait, there's more. From outside, way outside the bubble, from the Hindu newspaper. Quote, I've lost count of the number of panel discussions I've held in Pakistan to push for laws against the kidney trade, says Farhat Muazzam, founding chairperson of the Center for Biomedical Ethics. In Karachi, Pakistan had begun to establish itself as a leading destination for kidney tourism. The country to fly to and buy kidneys with impunity. Me, I'd use money, but some people apparently just use impunity. But wait, I'm over here. There's more. Dr. Muazzam wrote about diseases in Punjab where a third of the residents have only one kidney. But they got a lot of it. It becomes clear that the attempts of India and Pakistan to deal with the kidney racket are startlingly similar. As many as 2,000 kidneys were being transplanted in the country, Pakistan, every year over the last 5 years. Half the recipients were people from outside Pakistan, overwhelmingly from the Middle East and Europe. When India passed the Transplantation of Organs Act in 1994, those looking for organ vendors, not grinders, shifted their focus to Iraq. Soon after the 2002 war, Pakistan became a favored destination because we had no clear laws to deter organ trade. Kidney tourism, ladies and gentlemen. In our ally, Pakistan. But, on a lighter note, from the Times of London, a controversial television nanny whose outdated and potentially harmful childcare methods brought complaints from hundreds of viewers appears to have fabricated her qualifications. Claire Verity. Well, how could you not trust somebody with that name? She appeared in a program called Bringing Up Baby, a program that explored various methods of infant care. She claimed to hold numerous childcare diplomas from organizations that, oddly enough, denied any knowledge of her. The Royal College of Pediatrics and Child Health said her recommendation that babies should sleep alone in a separate room contradicted guidance from the Department of Health on reducing the risk of cot death. The channel that broadcast her show announced it would hold an investigation into her qualifications after it circulated publicity material detailing the award she claimed to hold, and described her on their website as having a string of nannying qualifications. This week, the broadcaster said it had concluded the inquiry after 12 weeks. Now is asking her production company for documentary evidence to support the qualifications listed in a document supplied by her agent. The channel said it had no further plans to work with Verity and had planned only one series of Bringing a Baby all along. Among the complaints from viewers, some of child cruelty. The regulator of the broadcasting industry said last month that the channel had been wrong to describe her as a maternity nurse. She has no children. That's cute. She claimed to hold diplomas in child daycare and preschool practice from the national awarding body, but a spokeswoman said there is no trace whatsoever of this lady in our database. She also said that the organization did not offer a diploma in preschool practice. Maternity nurse training, from which Verity said she had qualifications in maternity practice, sleep training, and pediatrics, said she did not. This person never enrolled on any of our courses, and as such, has never been trained by us, the spokeswoman said. The awarding bodies also searched their systems for Verity under the name of her former husband, Houseman, and Bradley, which is her voting name. She also claimed to hold a degree in business studies from the University of York. A spokeswoman said it had no record of her, and it did not offer a degree in business studies. According to the Times, Claire Verity has enrolled in child care courses since the paper first questioned her qualifications last October. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the good news is that kind of thing couldn't happen in this country. That was news from outside the bubble. This is news from right here. But as I say, nobody could get on television with goofy professional qualifications and pretend to give people professional advice. Oh, excuse me, this from the New York Post. Dr. Phil, who is reportedly under investigation by the California Board of Psychology for practicing without a license in California. You know that he visited Britney Spears in the hospital earlier this month. The complaint alleges McGraw, who does not hold a license to practice psychology in California, violated doctor-patient privilege by discussing her case after visiting her in the hospital and going on television to talk about it. Because of confidentiality regulations, Jeffrey Thomas the Cedars-Sinai Hospital's executive officer, assistant executive officer, said he could not confirm the existence of a complaint. He's the assistant executive officer of the California Board of Psychology. The Post didn't make that clear. He could not confirm the existence of a complaint, nor whether a purported complaint form against Dr. Phil has been making its way around the Internet is authentic. Dr. Phil would have violated state law only if he charged Spears or her family for his services, according to state regulations. He's also not licensed to practice psychology in his home state of Texas because of disciplinary sanctions imposed by the Texas State Board of Examiners of Psychologists in 1989. That stemmed from a former therapy client filing a complaint against him, alleging their relationship was inappropriate. Ladies and gentlemen, as I say, but the story does point out there is no response yet from the Dr. Phil show. He did, as I noted, go public talking about Britney Spears' situation after having a meeting with her. Her family held a press conference to denounce him for doing that. And when you violated the ethical standards of the Spears family, you've gone a ways. So we don't know if Dr. Phil is feeling apologetic about the situation or making plans.
Hi, I'm Dr. Phil. I'm not allowed to practice in Texas or California, but I'll bet you weren't interested in calling me for an appointment anyhow. What I think you will be interested in is my first nighttime series, Dr. Phil's Trust Bust.
Each week, Dr. Phil is taken to the confidence of a new and different troubled celebrity. In frank and startling off-air conversations, Dr. Phil probes for the roots of the difficulty. Then,
I go public. That's right. You get to learn what I learned in a lightning debrief. Then, we stage a no-holds-barred celebrity intervention right here at the Dr. Phil house, and the helping really begins. It's a fast-moving hour that takes you straight from cause to cure and back. And talk about unscripted.
I thought I could trust you.
You can, but it's a different kind of trust.
I'm sorry, you have no right to do this. I don't even believe in psychiatry.
Oh, that's okay. I'm barely a psychologist.
Hurt never helped so much. Dr. Phil's Trust Bust, coming to prime time on E!, the network that makes you go, ee.
Thank you. staring out at the moon. If the rain is the same, oh, blue, yes, yes, if the rain is the same.
This is Le Show, and it's time now, ladies and gentlemen, for Tales of Airport Security. Oh, I printed this and left off the name of the person who wrote it. It's a female, so I'll just call her Bob. My airport story, Harry, doesn't involve pain and suffering like so many of the stories have, but I was amazed when it happened. I went through security at the Oakland, California airport and had forgotten that I had my travel mug in my backpack. I passed through unnoticed. Why is that disturbing? Because the travel mug in question is a smallish stainless steel cylinder with no handle. It basically looks like a pipe bomb. It was also filled with water, more than 3 ounces, of course, which could have been gasoline or some other volatile liquid. It's in fact, a Nissan 12-ounce stainless tumbler. You've seen those. Sell them at Starbucks. Our listener continues, the next time I went through the same airport, I got a lecture because I had a gallon-sized clear Ziploc bag instead of a quart-sized clear Ziploc bag. I feel safer. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now some news about the I countries. The hell, we just should call them that now. All our trouble is with countries. Well, not all. Ireland's off the map right now. Ireland cleaned up. But Israel, Iran, Iraq, India. I say, before we do anything else, let's just get them all to change their names to start with different letters. Anyway, this is from, of all places, Newsweek, which reports that in private conversations with Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, the president all but disavowed the national intelligence estimate that said that Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. This according to a senior administration official who accompanied Bush on his Mideast trip. He told the Israelis he can't control what the intelligence community says, parenthesis, anymore, unquote, but that the NIE's conclusions don't reflect his own views about Iran's nuclear weapons program, said the official, who wanted anonymity because he likes his knees. So here's the president admitting that his own views are not based in, I think, both senses of the word, on intelligence. He told Greta Von Susteren on Fox News, when she asked him, did he disavow the national intelligence estimate, that he felt the intelligence analysts were sincere. Now, that's not the way I learned that you evaluate analysis. It's on the sincerity of the analyst. I thought you evaluated on the basis of, is it accurate or not? I have no doubt, the president said, about the sincerity of the intelligence analysts. What about Iraq? The Iraqi defense minister said this week his nation would not be able to take full responsibility for its own internal security until 2012 and not be able to, on its own, to defend its borders until at least 2018, 10 years from now. Abdul Qadir, the minister. These were the most specific public projections of a timeline for the American commitment in Iraq by officials in either Washington or Baghdad. According to the New York Times, Pentagon officials expressed no surprise at Qadir's projections, or even less optimistic than those he made last year. Apparently he's running out of Kool-Aid. Withdrawal of American forces, which are dependent on the Iraqis standing up, therefore appears distant, further away than any American officials have previously stated in public. Senior Pentagon official said Mr. Qadir, as the Times called him, had been consistent throughout his week-long visit in pressing that timeline. All right, then. He's consistent. Now. Not like last year. Meantime, officials from the Government Accountability Office of Congress found that of their $6.4 billion budget for capital projects, that is, investment in infrastructure and building the country, Iraqi ministries had spent only 4.4% of it as of August of last year. State Department objects, saying they have unofficial data from the Ministry of Finance that are more up to date. So it's all going good. Well, excuse me. I taught English. I should know. Ladies and gentlemen, a pattern appears to be developing. I know we're late to it, but it does appear to be developing. The Washington Post reported this week that email messages sent and received by White House personnel during the first 3 years of the Bush administration were routinely recorded on tapes that were recycled, just like old Steve Allen shows. That was from the White House's chief information officer in a court filing this week. That's an ironic title for the guy. During the period in, White House spokesman Tony Fratto, hey, Tony, said he had no reason to believe that any emails were deliberately destroyed. No, they were just recycled, babe. From 2001 to October 2003, the White House's practice was to use the same backup tape each day to copy new as well as old emails, making it possible that some of those emails could still be recovered, even from a tape that was repeatedly overwritten. Only after a court ruling in October 2003 did the White House begin preserving and storing all backup tapes. It's the grown-ups, ladies and gentlemen, who were bringing the rule of law. You know, it's about the rule of law, they used to say during the Clinton impeachment. Well, two federal statutes require presidential communications, including emails, to be preserved for the nation's historical record. And other tapes going away. Attorneys for a former detainee at a secret CIA prison. Ooh, I'm not supposed to say that. Said in a court filing this week, those damn courts, always with the filings, that intelligence officials had falsely claimed in public statements that his interrogations were not videotaped and that all videotaped interrogations stopped in 2002 and that only a small number of CIA detainees were unusually harshly interrogated. The basis of the assertions, however, was redacted from the court filing by, yes, the Bush administration, under an unusually stringent security order that blocks the attorneys for Majid Khan from disclosing evidence of the alleged falsehoods or detailing how he was treated while in CIA custody. This is about those tapes the CIA has already admitted destroying of the interrogations of two detainees, but apparently there's more. But maybe not, because we can't, says one of the lawyers, we're under an extremely restrictive gag order that in many ways is making our representation extremely difficult and certainly compromises the public's ability to know what's happening. We are challenging a state-sanctioned system of torture, the details of which the government is keeping secret, unquote. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. That lawyer sounds to me vaguely Canadian. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Tokyo, former Mitsubishi president, was convicted of professional negligence in a fatal head-on crash that followed a systematic cover-up of auto defects at the Japanese manufacturer. Former Mitsubishi president Katsuhiko Kawasoe had pleaded innocent. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison, but suspended. He and three other company officials were suspected of failing to report defects, although they knew the problems could cause serious accidents. They were charged in 2004 with professional negligence, resulting in death in an accident in southwestern Japan after the brakes failed on his Mitsubishi vehicle. The three other officials were given suspended sentences. Kawasoe became president in 1997, quit in disgrace after acknowledging the automaker had hidden defects for decades, many secretly repaired without recalls. For decades, Mitsubishi kept a two-tier record of driver complaints, tucking away defect reports in a locker that employees called H, standing for the Japanese word for secret. Mitsubishi apologized this week to the family of the driver who died, and the company promised to do better. After saying on Monday that it was irresponsible and incorrect to suggest that he had directly referred to Senator Obama's youthful use of illegal drugs, Black Entertainment Tellers and founder Robert Johnson now says his remarks were inappropriate, and he has issued an apology. Quote, I'm writing to apologize to you and your family personally for the uncalled for comments I made at a recent Clinton event, Johnson says in a letter to Senator Obama. In my zeal to support Senator Clinton, I made some very inappropriate remarks from which I am truly sorry. I hope you will accept this apology. Good luck on the campaign trail, unquote. St. Paul, Minnesota. A man who pleaded guilty Tuesday to ripping the head off a duck in the lobby of a St. Paul, Minnesota hotel is not a horrible person, according to his attorney. Nobody's been willing to look at the good things he's done in his life and what good things he'll do. Scott Clark was an auditor with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. He's since been terminated. He pled guilty to felony animal cruelty, and he told the judge he was extremely sorry and had never hurt an animal before. It appeared, according to the judge, that the suspect had had a substantial amount to drink before the incident. It gave him the superhuman strength. During an interview with Diane Sawyer on ABC's Good Morning America this week, Diane Keaton blurted out the F word, then apologized. An ABC News spokesman called the incident unfortunate and said that the word had been bleeped in later feeds to Western time zones. So I guess the West is just a cleaner place. Dayline Washington, Donald Fear, head of the Baseball Players Association, apologized to the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform for the union's inaction on the sports steroid scandal. But he also pointed the finger at Congress. That's what I like, an apology with a pointed finger. The University of Colorado's costumed buffalo mascot showed up for a kids' night at a Denver Nuggets basketball game, dressed in what some described as gangsta-themed attire. The Chip, the Colorado University mascot, wore a do-rag, baggy pants, and a gang-associated tattoo. Colorado University has apologized for the insensitive, unfortunate, and thoughtless display. The act was the work of two student volunteers, but the university would not identify them. Supporters of the stunt said Chip was dressed in hip-hop attire, not gangsta attire. According to the school newspaper, the mascot costume had a teardrop tattoo below one eye. The newspaper said the tattoo is commonly associated with gang activity, often signifying that the wearer has killed someone. Dateline Annapolis, Maryland, the president of Allegheny Power apologized for a light bulb distribution that went awry as the utility sent a pair of energy-saving compact fluorescent light bulbs to each of its 220,000 Maryland residential customers, many of whom said they thought the bulbs were free, but a newspaper story earlier this month described an $11.52 surcharge attached to the bulbs. That triggered a wave of protest from customers and state lawmakers. We acknowledge that there's some concerns associated with the distribution of the energy-efficient light bulbs, and we acknowledge we could have done a better job of clearly advertising to customers the cost of the program, says the head of Allegheny Power. For this, Allegheny Power accepts full responsibility for the confusion. We are truly regretful and offer our sincerest apologies. P.S. We still want the money. Dateline Tri-Cities, Washington. You'll have to name the three cities. Benton County District Court Judge Holly Hollenbach has apologized for telling a cancer patient to remove a knitted cap or leave his courtroom. Yeah, Holly, him. He says he told Bev Williams he was sorry and that the no-hat rule would no longer apply in his courtroom, to be replaced by a no-underwear rule. Golf Week magazine apologized Friday for putting a noose on the cover of the magazine to illustrate the controversy over a Golf Channel anchor's use of the word lynch in a comment about Tiger Woods. The editor responsible for the cover has been replaced. We apologize for creating this graphic cover that received extreme negative reaction from consumers, subscribers, and advertisers across the country, said the head of the publishing company, Turnstile Publishing. I wonder what they're interested in. Dateline Colombo, Sri Lanka. An 80-year-old Sri Lankan man has been released from prison after spending 50 years awaiting trial, his lawyer said this week. D.P. James was arrested in August 1958. He was then 30 years old for attacking and wounding his father with a knife. He was sent to jail after his arrest, then moved to a mental hospital for treatment, and then went back to jail until finally the court had forgotten his case. He was never put on trial. The court official said James was released last week on bail and apologized for the, quote, rare, pathetic incident. While we're in Asia, a popular rock singer has apologized for sparking an uproar in Muslim-majority Malaysia by baring his chest during a live TV concert and will do community service to atone for the stunt. That's right. It's a chestal malfunction. A Greeley, Colorado businessman has apologized after a joke about Illinois Senator Obama fell flat during the annual Citizen of the West banquet at the National Western Stock Show. William Farr was pretending to read telegrams congratulating this year's award recipient when he pulled out a piece of paper and said, "I have a telegram for the White House." Then he added, "They're going to have to change the name of that building if Obama's elected." He has apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature, don't you know, of this broadcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said Poiple. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the
Biofuels will cause more harm than good to the environment unless strict controls are imposed on how they're grown, according to the British Royal Society. The Environment Commissioner of the European Union admits that the adverse effects on environment and poor communities have been underestimated of biofuels, concerns arising over forests being cut down, and habitats such as savanna dug up to make room for biofuel crops. People in the areas affected may have little say in the decisions, and there is competition for land between biofuels and food. What would you rather do, eat or drive? The latest ocean research shows currents around Antarctica are responding to climate change. Scientists studying the freshness of seawater have found the ocean is becoming less salty in areas near the Antarctic continent. You'd think that would be good? Hey, we could drink the ocean water. But no, salty water is critical to driving the ocean currents, which in turn send heat around the world. If the process continues for some decades, it would have two effects, says one of the researchers. One, it might change these ocean currents. And secondly, if the ice that's moving off the continent of Antarctica is melting more rapidly than we thought, then that would contribute to the rapid rise of sea levels. And in fact, climatic changes appear to be destabilizing vast ice sheets of western Antarctica that had previously seemed relatively protected, researchers reported this week, raising the prospect of faster sea level rise. While the overall loss is a tiny fraction of the miles deep ice that covers much of Antarctica, scientists said the new finding is important because the continent holds about 90% of the Earth's ice. I thought that was Bourbon Street bars held that, but apparently not. And until now, large-scale ice loss there had been limited to the peninsula that juts out toward South America. In addition, researchers found that the rate of ice loss in that area has accelerated over the past 10 years, as it has on most glaciers and ice sheets around the world. Without doubt, Antarctica as a whole is now losing ice yearly, and each year it's losing more, says the lead author of a paper published online in the journal Nature Geoscience. The land temperature for the continent is remaining essentially unchanged, except for the fast-warming peninsula, and yet the ice sheet is shrinking. What are you going to do, ladies and gentlemen? Enjoy news of the warm. That's what. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The president is back in the United States from his groundbreaking visit to the Middle East. I don't think had he ever been there before? I don't know. Anyway, hadn't been to a lot of places ever, but he went to the Middle East this week, last week, met with the heads of Israel and Palestine, Palestinian Authority, and also with other Arab leaders. And the results are to be seen. However, he did almost guarantee, I think either spokespeople or the president himself came close to guaranteeing that there would be an Israel-Palestinian agreement by the end of this year, which didn't make much news, perhaps deservedly. Predictions aren't news, you know, except sometimes. Then he came back and held a press conference on Friday announcing an economic stimulus, the need for an economic stimulus, because we're not in a recession. So you need an economic stimulus because we're not in a recession, ladies and gentlemen. It's just that those damn pesky homeowners who kept insisting on the banks lending them money when they didn't have any income or jobs. So it's been a challenging week for the president. He's back at home. And maybe he's even receiving a phone call.
Jawbone and Eagle.
A43, sounding proud of yourself. Or at least the guy who chooses the Secret Service code name sounds proud of you.
Yeah, well, six of one out the other. A41, I'm just tired.
Well, Sprout, you did have a big week meeting with our Saudi friends look productive.
Oh, yes, sir. I had a very frank conversation with our Saudi friends. We discussed all the major issues, the threat of Iran, the need to increase oil production, the Middle East peace process, the terrorist threat, the need to get on the road to democracy. And I think we made good progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would our Saudi friends agree to?
Gonna open up an embassy in Baghdad, and I made them promise it won't be bigger than ours.
Good deal. And as far as ramping up oil production is concerned?
41, tell you the gosh's honest truth.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little surprised by the reaction of our Saudi friends.
Why?
Well, they said, if you know so much about it, you go drill for oil. And I told them that I tried that,
mm-hmm.
and then I said, if you know so much about the Middle East, why don't you try running it?
That was a mistake.
No kidding. They said, good deal. We had to extend the meeting by another half hour or two. What is it you spooks say? Make the cat walk backwards.
It's walk the cat back.
Well,
I don't have to tell you, I wasn't a spook. Managed spooks. Big difference.
Yeah.
Anywho, 43, looked like he got the ball rolling on the Middle East peace process again.
Yeah, I think both Prime Minister Olmert and the other guy agree on the urgency of getting an agreement this year, because as I told them both, never can tell if the next president is going to be like me and just put the whole thing on ice for another few years, because it's, you know, it's just too much of a tar ball. So now, while I care, is the time to move.
Message, you care.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Condi said this before she flew off to Iraq. You know, never too late to build a legacy.
Well, good luck with that one, 43. You know, the closer you get to a settlement over there, the more dangerous it is.
Well, we've stopped the settlements. The Ehudnik agreed to that.
I mean, closer you get to an agreement. Ehudnik?
Yeah, he gave himself a nickname because I was kind of stumped.
Okay, well, the closer you get to an agreement, the more the hotheads on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Get hot. I know it, 4-1. I've heard the briefing CDs.
Briefing CDs.
Yeah, I know, 4-1. In your day, they were briefing LPs, but it's a new age.
Mm-hmm. A new recessionary age. You know, one of these days, a Bush won't preside over an economic downturn his last year in office.
Or her, you know, could be Jenna.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, look, that's what I told our Saudi friends. They ramp up oil production, they lower the price, head off a recession, all of a sudden, America doesn't hate Arabs again.
Mm-hmm. And our Saudi friends said?
They said something about all one going up, the dollar was going down, and I knew I was, you know, peeing up the proverb.
Mm. Still, you got this stimulus package starting up. Might do the job.
Sure, unless the Democrats get a hold of it, then you know what they'll turn it into.
Spending bill.
A stimulus package. What do you think? That's mine.
Not bad, 43. Maybe don't let all your writers leave just yet.
No, we got a good new bunch from the Weekly Standard. They're going to work out.
Mm-hmm. You still got the surge going for you.
Mm-hmm.
Our Saudi friends must have liked that.
Of course they do. Why else do you think they'd invest in a whole embassy?
No, good point.
Hey, whatever the results of my overseas exposition, it kept me relevant.
The good thing, 43. Of course, Barr always thinks you're relevant.
That's great, 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
Well, feeling a little sleep derived. Talk to you soon.
Will do.
Thank you.
Can you hear it clearly? Ladies and gentlemen, that's concluding this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. Up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Shortwave in Berlin on the mighty 104 on Sirius and XM satellite radio. Around the continents, girdling the globe via the internet on your computer at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, live and archived. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/the show and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Dr. Phil being able to practice in California if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, huh? Email this broadcast, or to find out the playlist of the music featured on this broadcast, there's only one place to go, harryshearer.com. And I'll see you on the video side. If you want to join the millions who've already seen Katie Couric backstage during election night in New Hampshire, or if you want to see the final silent presidential debate of the primary season, join me at my damn channel, www.mydamnchannel.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Bob Dunn, for goodness sake, here at WWNO. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Tell me something, mister.